Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, local talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today we are talking about what the whole nation is talking about, the race for president and the pivotal role Wisconsin could play in the upcoming February 19th primary. And there is a lot of big news happening as we speak. Mitt Romney has suspended his campaign after a poor showing on Super Tuesday, leaving John McCain as the presumptive nominee, facing a strong challenge from conservatives by Mike Huckabee, and also Ron Paul still on the ballots on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, it was a draw on Super Tuesday, with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama only a few thousand votes apart and only a few delegates apart after all the votes in all the states were tallied. Both candidates will be spending a lot of time in the Badger State in the next couple of weeks. We've got a great panel to help us sort all of this out. John Smart is the former chairman of the Price County Democratic Party and a member of the Park Falls School Board. For the Republicans, our original guest, Walter John Chilson, got snowed in Milwaukee, and we've got a great stand-in, Bob Williams, the owner of Idea Associates Public Relations of Stevens Point. He is also a longtime party strategist who coordinated the campaign of former Republican Governor Lee Dreyfus. And lending a nonpartisan perspective, Connie Sexauer is an assistant professor of history at UW-Marathon County. Now, we want to hear from you in the next hour. Who would you like to see as president? Are you disappointed that Governor Romney is no longer a candidate? If you're a conservative, do you have problems with John McCain, as so many of the pundits on talk radio do? Do you think Mike Huckabee has a chance now that the field has been reduced to two? And if you're a Democrat, who do you like, Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, and why? And regardless of your party affiliation, what are the issues that this campaign will be fought over? What are the most important challenges facing America? And who do you think the strongest candidate is on either side? This is your show, and we're ready to listen to your opinion at 261-6371, 261-6371, or toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open right now. If you've got an opinion on the presidential race, if you want to call up and give an endorsement to any of the candidates that are on the ballot, this is your chance to do it. It's your show, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. And Connie, Bob, and John, thank you so much for being with us today. We've got a lot to talk about. And what I think we're going to do is start out with the news of the day, the clip from Mitt Romney speaking before a group of conservative political activists and officially suspending his campaign for president.
I want you to know, given this a lot of thought, I'd forestall the launch of a national campaign. And frankly, I'd be making it easier for Senator Clinton or Obama to win. Frankly, in this time of war, I simply cannot let my campaign be a part of aiding a surrender to terror. This isn't an easy decision. I hate to lose my family, my friends, you, my supporters across the country. You've given a great deal to get me where I have a shot to becoming president. If this were only about me, I'd go on. But it's never been only about me. I entered this race because I love America. And because I love America, in this time of war, I feel I have to now stand aside for our party and for our country.
Bob Williams, your impressions on Governor Mitt Romney suspending his campaign for president.
Glenn, I think that the family had a conversation over the weekend, and over the last 3 days, and Mrs. Romney, looking at their family checkbook, said, "You've spent $35 million of our money, sweetie, and you've got five sons and five daughter-in-laws. Let's reconsider." And I think that started this discussion.
It does bring to mind Barack Obama's rejoinder in the last Democratic debate when they were touting Mitt Romney's record on the economy. And he said, well, if you look at the money he spent so far, he hasn't gotten much of a return on his investment, has he? And no, he didn't. So why didn't he get a return on his investment? He certainly threw the entire family fortune behind what looked like it should have a pretty good chance of succeeding. He got the support of National Review, the conservative publication, in a preemptive editorial a few months ago. What happened to Mitt Romney?
Asking me that question? Ben?
I'm asking you, and then the rest of us.
I think the middle, the independents, gravitated toward McCain because he was not a right winger. They didn't perceive him as a left winger, and the right wing of the party has now gone to either going to have to go into the wilderness, or they're going to have to buy into McCain. And I think that's what happened, that in all these primaries, there's a group of 35% of the people that are not identified with the party, and they're the ones that sought a man that was not strictly a Republican right-wing candidate.
What about Mike Huckabee? He won a number of Southern primaries. He's still on the ballot. Are those conservatives going to go to him? And at this point, is it a lost cause for him?
Well, if you listen to Ann Coulter, they're all going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Ought to be interesting.
In fact, John Smart, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh today, and he's talking about holding a Hillary Clinton fundraiser. Keep her in it so we can win it was the phrase he used.
I don't think that Hillary Clinton probably is going to welcome support from Ann Coulter or Rush Limbaugh. If I can go back, though, to Mitt Romney, I think what happened to Mitt Romney was that he did not play to his strength. His strength should have been as a businessman. I mean, his record of bringing the Salt Lake City Olympics back to prominence and of reasonably good economic structure in Massachusetts, he didn't really play to that. Instead, he came out and tried to sound like he was everybody's idea of a social conservative. He might have known that they would go back and look at his races for governor and for Senate in Massachusetts when he was trying to out-liberal Ted Kennedy. And I think he really kind of blew himself out of the water. As I said, he did not play to his strength, which should have been his business acumen and expertise.
Connie, your observations.
I've actually had people say to me that Republicans and Democrats both, that he was too stiff for them. And some people have actually compared him to the Al Gore persona, that a bright person can get things done but couldn't really be one of the people, as opposed to John McCain, who everybody embraces. And I also have had people say to me, and you've seen it before, like with Steve Forbes and others, when somebody puts that much money into the campaign that is their own money, people question that. And I know we have a hard time wondering where all the funding's coming from, and we're constantly being bombarded, and they want the government to pay for the elections and things. But I've actually had people say to me, why would somebody invest that much money? What's going on?
There's a perception that he's trying to buy the presidency.
Exactly.
John, on the other hand, in Wisconsin, we've got Herb Kohl, who champions the idea that I'm nobody's senator but yours, because he doesn't get any money from anybody else. He doesn't need it.
Yeah.
So it depends on how you play that game, I think, Connie.
And isn't that interesting, John, that he never used that? The $35 million I'm putting in, I owe nobody but my wife and children for.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah. He didn't bring that up
either.
That,
to me, is a very strong argument. I want this so badly, and I don't want anybody to say they bought me. Mr. Romney cannot be bought. I bought me. I kind of like that.
Well, Herb Kohl, but it certainly, you know, he did not play to his strength.
But I think especially like working class people and the common middle class, they don't want to pay for it. But by the same token, I think they're very suspicious of somebody that doesn't play by those rules. You know, you've got all the money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And John Smart, I've got to ask you, as our Democrat on the panel, this campaign, at least on the Republican side, is really going to be fought a lot on national security issues in the weeks ahead. And Romney had a slam on Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. He said he had to drop out of the race because he wanted the Republicans to unify so that there wouldn't be a surrender in the war on terror. Ostensibly, a vote for Clinton or a vote for Obama is a vote for the terrorists. Your reaction?
My reaction is that Mr. Romney didn't have any background in national security either. So essentially he's saying, you shouldn't be voting for me, you should be voting for John McCain, which is rather peculiar, even in the case of dropping out of the race. Mm-hmm. And we should point out, too, that he's not dropping out of the race. He is suspending his campaign.
Right.
And we ought to discuss that a little bit, because John Edwards also suspended his campaign.
Let's pick up on that a little bit later in the discussion. I do want to play a clip from John McCain, recorded just an hour or so after Mitt Romney, speaking to the same group of conservative political activists today.
I am proud to be a conservative, and I make that claim because I share with you the most basic of conservative principles, that liberty is a right conferred by our Creator, not by governments, and that the proper object of justice and the rule of law in our country is not to aggregate power to the state, but to protect the liberty and property of its citizens. And like you, I understand, as Edmund Burke observed, that whenever a separation is made between liberty and justice, neither is safe. Well, I have long worked to help grow a public majority of support for Republican candidates and principles. I have also always believed, like you, in the wisdom of Ronald Reagan, who wanted and warned in an address to this conference in 1975, he said, "A political party cannot be all things to all people. It must represent certain fundamental beliefs, which must not be compromised to political expediency or simply to swell its numbers."
John McCain obviously touting his conservative credentials and trying to stem the tide of criticism coming from the right wing of his party. Bob, do you think he's going to be successful come November? Are Republicans going to fall in line behind John McCain?
I have described John McCain, and perhaps I'm influenced by seeing the television of him having 5 years in a Hanoi hotel, as sometimes he seems to me the only adult in the room when you get a group of politicians together. There's something so sensible and so adult-like about him that I think he has that appeal that is going to transcend maybe the political debate. We'll have to wait and see, because he is different. That's why I have been, for the last 3 weeks, I have been a big favor of John McCain.
Why all the problems with him on the right? Why is Rush Limbaugh, Ann Coulter, Sean Hannity, these right-wing pundits, why are they so vocal in their opposition to John McCain, even to the point of saying that they might go out and vote for Hillary Clinton? I don't get it. I mean, the guy's got a pro-life position on the abortion question. He's a fiscal conservative. He wants to lower taxes. He wants to reduce the size of government. He wants to cut spending. He's strong on national defense. Why the problems with the right wing?
John McCain's not afraid to cross over and to work on compromises. And so a lot of the programs that he works on, for instance, immigration or the tax reform or something, it's seen by the conservatives, I think, as more liberal. But I also think that's why he might appeal to independents.
Yeah.
Because the country has been so polarized, especially in the last two elections, that people don't like that. And when they see this, well, this is somebody that the general public, the independents, could see as more of a moderate. He's got to win that conservative vote. But by the same token, and it kind of reminds me of when Bill Clinton ran in 92, especially, it was like, okay, liberal is a curse word. It's not the right word to get to. But what he did is he really tried to cross lines and have more of a compromise, which upset Democrats, but still they voted for him.
We're going to talk about the Democratic side of the race. We are going to take a brief break here for some announcements. And I want to remind you of the phone numbers if you want to join the conversation, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. David in Ironwood, Michigan, hang on. You're next.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888 613-0600.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin, here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at wpr.org/WLBL.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We're talking presidential politics just 2 days after Super Tuesday and a week or so before the February 19th big primary election here in Wisconsin. Our guest, Bob Williams, a Republican strategist. We also have a Democrat, John Smart, who is a former chairman of the Park Falls Democratic Party, and also Connie Sexauer of UW-Marathon County. We're taking your calls, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. We have David in Ironwood. David, you are on Route 51. Hello, David.
Hello. I'm sort of like Obama, mainly because he looks like he's going to listen to the other side, too many people. But the other point I would call about is the Michigan delegates to the Democratic Convention. It's all screwed up. They didn't even have all the candidates on the ballot. At least Florida, if they want to apportion the delegates down there, they could have a vote total to go back to. In Michigan, they don't even have that. I mean, if they wanted to divide up those delegates fairly, they would have to rehold the primary or have a Michigan caucus.
Yeah, you know, and David, you are calling from Ironwood, Michigan. You were able to reach you with our signal from the Park Falls station, WHBM. And you bring up a good point. As a resident of Michigan, do you feel disenfranchised by the whole process? And does that leave you with some hard feelings as we go forward?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Michigan, the highest unemployment in the nation, where the people are hurting the most, and because the state and the national party had this disagreement, they punished I didn't have no say in moving that primary up. And who was they going to punish? Me. Instead of punishing the, you know, they have superdelegates to the representatives and the governor and stuff. Take them away. Don't take my delegates away.
John Smart, your reaction as a Democrat, did they make a mistake by disenfranchising all these voters in Michigan?
No, I don't think that the National Party made a mistake. I think that the Party of Michigan made a mistake. And it's a very arcane discussion trying to explain about the fact that the Michigan and Florida delegates are not going to be seated at the convention. And there may well be some kind of a resolution of this. But what the reason for it was, the Democratic National Committee put this in place because they didn't want everybody to continue to be leapfrogging each other to try to have the first primary. We would have had primaries last December. They were all trying to get ahead of everybody else. And in many cases, the primary reason for it is to bring as much of the panoply of the campaign to their state as possible for financial reasons. And they were trying to restrict that from happening. And it made a great deal of sense. And Florida and Michigan jumped the gun. And yeah, I agree with the caller that the average Democrat who'd like to vote in the state of Michigan was kind of done in by his own state party. And the same thing happened in Florida, and it's too bad, but I think that a resolution will be arrived at, and I have a feeling that every voter will be able to consider themselves heard.
Well, if they seat the delegation right now, does Hillary Clinton get all the votes because she was the only one on the ballot?
Actually, what I've read is that they would wait until it gets closer to the convention. But the trouble is, I don't think anybody realized how close the race was going to be. They also said that after the decision was made, that they would almost have to embrace those votes once they know who the candidate is, because they want those people to vote Democratic in the November election. And if they have people that are that angry, they'll either stay home or they'll vote for the opposition out of spite.
Same thing in Florida.
Absolutely, yeah. And those are big states. Those really count.
They are.
Yes, David.
Yes, I'm really mad because, I mean, there's better ways. You punish the people who make the decision, not the general electorate. And during this time when Michigan and Florida was having the primary, you gave all this free advertising to the Republicans, and they dominated the news. I mean, it's like they're shooting themselves in the foot. I would have punish the, I would have banned the state legislatures and the governor of Michigan from coming to the convention.
From coming to the convention. Well, that's a novel solution.
That would have been an
it?
Interesting way
it
to
probably would
it.
Have worked. David, thanks so much for the phone call. And Bob Williams, as a Republican, you've got to be looking on this. How did the Republicans deal with this situation? Because they moved up their primaries on the Republicans, too.
Yes, we did. But we did not have the opposition that Michigan presented. I am a party man. I believe in the parties. I believe in the way they should raise money, not to take it from the so-called special interests as your war chest. And I think the party of Michigan, and I agree with John on this, the party of Michigan, I think, made the mistake, and people like David are saying, you're wrong. And I think they are wrong to try to scrabble way up to the top just for the publicity and not say, okay, we're down here, and I don't know when they're, what it was. Was it March or April, their primary? But I think it was a mistake of the party, but generally I much prefer a party as being the sound force because it is the kindest mistress of all. It has to homogenize all the people on one side of the aisle, and so they're not voting for their own special interests, whether it whatever it will be.
John Smart, when it comes to convention time, if Obama and Clinton are still split down the middle, and there's a move to seat the Michigan and Florida delegations with both of them voting for Hillary Clinton, that could be definitive.
It could be, but I have a feeling that something will be resolved by that time. And we also must keep in mind in the Democratic convention that there are about 800 superdelegates, mm-hmm. and they're the ones who are actually going to be making the decision, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that I agree with what Bob is saying about party strength. It's necessary, and it is a great leveler in our society, in our politics, and I think that we need to listen to what the parties do.
So here you have this great uprising. More young people getting involved in the process than ever before. Barack Obama appealing to the masses, getting young people to vote. And in the end, you're telling me that it's the old people in the Democratic Party who are going to make the decision?
Well, not
and
always
take it
old
away.
People, Glenn. Now, keep in mind, they're not all old people.
Well, the established party people and not...
But we're talking about elected officials. The superdelegates are people are like our governor and like our two senators and like Dave Obey. Those are our superdelegates. We're not talking about getting a bunch of old, you know, smoke-filled room guys out of nowhere to come and make these decisions.
Well, I mean, the guys in the smoke-filled rooms in years past were also party officials. Isn't this going to be a bucket of cold water on all this youthful idealism if it ends up being the established party hacks?
I don't think so, and
I'm
only saying that this will happen if indeed it stays balanced, if the delegate counts remain like they are now, which is pretty much even.
There's 700...
Bob, you got to hold that thought. We got to take a news break. We're listening. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking presidential politics, and we got a great panel. We'll be back with much, much more right after this short news break. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 on the Ideas Network. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today we're talking presidential politics. Super Tuesday, Mitt Romney dropping out of the race, the upcoming February 19th primary, the neck-and-neck battle between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. If you're a political junkie, this is your year. And we have your panel, John Smart, former chairman of the Price County Democratic Party. Also for the Republicans, Bob Williams, a longtime party strategist, also the owner of Idea Associates, public relations of Stevens Point, and providing a nonpartisan perspective, we have Connie Sexauer, who is an assistant professor of history at UW-Marathon County. We want to hear from you. Who would you like to see in the White House? What do you think of the developments on Super Tuesday and over the last couple of days? 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are open. And before we go further, let's hear from the Democrats. We listened to Mitt Romney and John McCain. Let's listen to Hillary Clinton on Super Tuesday.
Thank you very much. You know, tonight we are hearing the voices of people across America. People of all ages, of all colors, all faiths, and all walks of life. people on the day shift, the night shift, the late shift with the crying babies. Moms and dads who want a better world for our children. Young people who deserve a world of opportunity. All those who aren't in the headlines but have always written America's story. After 7 years of a president who listens only to the special interests, you're ready for a president who brings your voice, your values, and your dreams to your White House.
That's Hillary Clinton on Super Tuesday. And John Smart, your reaction to what was a very populist tone that she was striking that night.
She always does, I think. I think she's a very populist candidate. I have a particular bias. I spent a day with Hillary Clinton once, and she impressed me a great deal. I like to tell the story simply because the press tends to always make her out to be this kind of ice goddess, this frozen image of a, you know, ambitious woman and so forth. And I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Uzbekistan in the 90s, and she came there when she was first lady, and she spent an hour and a half with the students in my high school classroom. And she was astonishing. She was very warm, very friendly. She made everybody feel at ease, and but she didn't step back. The country of Uzbekistan is a totalitarian state, really. And she was very candid with the students, telling them that they were the next generation and that Uzbekistan had a terrible civil rights record, and they were responsible for making that change. And I was so proud of her. And that evening at a banquet, she came and threw her arms around me and said, "You must be so proud of those kids." Hmm. And I said, "Yeah, and I'm proud of you too." And I like to tell that story because, as I said, the image that too many people have of Hillary is that she's this, you know, cold, calculating woman. And she wasn't that way at all. I'll never forget her.
Why do you think people have that image?
I think a lot of it is the press, and I think a lot of it is the fact that she was the first lady, and so she was kind of off there on the side someplace. And when she did try to get involved in things like her famous foray into national health insurance, she really got slammed. So I think she's probably very overly cautious, perhaps, and she's kind of finding her stride now. But I think a lot of it has to do with the news media, and I can go on a rant about that, because the news media decided what she was going to be like, and now they take everything that she does and says and try to fit it into that mold that they've already created, and I think that's unfortunate.
That generation of women, too, being able to achieve at the level that she has, mm-hmm. She had to fight a man's world, and she is on the cutting edge of cutting into that. It rubs people the wrong way, men and women. You know, you're not doing the role that you're supposed to be doing. I have found, I also teach women's history and women's studies, and what I have found is the generation of women now, I'm 62 years old, but the generation of women who are professors, women, professional women that I know that are mid-30s to about early 40s, they're a softer generation. The doors were open for them. Hillary Clinton, the door was not open, and it's still not open. There are a lot of people that don't want her simply because she's a woman, and that is not just men.
Bob Williams, there's a perception that Hillary Clinton is a candidate the Republicans want to run against, that she will solidify the opposition of the base more than any other candidate. Is that so? If it is so, why?
The Republicans are dead wrong in saying she is a pushover. She's the one we run against. I think she is, as John pointed out, a very smart woman, a woman that can be quite likable, can be respected, as Connie pointed out. By the way, Connie, you're very young at 62 years of age.
Thank you.
But I wish that she's too smart to keep doing this. I heard that she said she used that word, running against the special interest. Now, that's, she's too smart for that. Special interests are the teachers' union. Special interests are the retired, which I am certainly old enough to be. I'm not smart enough to be. But I'm retired. The retired people are the most selfish people in America, I think. I think the environmental is, again, selfish. I think the drug industry is selfish. I think I just think that we can't start keep using these words, and I would tell her, don't don't do special interests.
Are the so-called captains of industry, the oil men, the people who run, are they special interests
too?
Of
course they are. They're trying, the oil people want Standard Oil and the to be the largest in the world, and they want to have the best deals for people. I just think, I keep going to work at places, and I go by places in Madison, and I on the way into town, and I see the Kraft. It was Oscar Mayer. 4,000 people work there. That's a special interest. Why do we run against them? Those people go to work there every day. I wish Hillary would calm down this type of separation campaign and recognize.
Let's hear from somebody who's making an issue of special interest politics and directing it against Hillary Clinton. It's her opponent in the Democratic primary, Barack Obama.
It's a choice between having a debate with the other party about who has the most experience in Washington or having one about who's most likely to change Washington, because that's a debate that we can win. It's a choice between a candidate who's taken more money from Washington lobbyists than either Republican in this race and a campaign that has not taken a dime of their money, because we have been funded by you. You have funded this campaign. And if I'm your nominee, my opponent will not be able to say that I voted for the war in Iraq, because I didn't. Or that I gave George Bush the benefit of the doubt on Iran, because I haven't. Or that I support the Bush-Cheney doctrine of not talking to leaders we don't like, because I profoundly disagree with that approach. And he will not be able to say that I wavered on something as fundamental as whether or not it's okay for America to use torture, because it's never okay. That is the choice in this election.
John Smart, do you agree with Barack Obama's criticism of Hillary Clinton?
What I thought of was this. I used to be an actor, and I know what it's like to stand before a crowd. You want to say the things that they're going to applaud. And that's what it amounts to. And I agree with what Bob said before about, you know, this, about zeroing in on special interests or taking PAC money, or, you know, politicians who are trying to appeal to as many people as possible, remember, are going to say things that they think are going to get the applause. And that's pretty much what it amounts to.
You don't think that his criticism of Hillary Clinton was heartfelt and authentic? When he talked about the difference between them and the vote on the war in Iraq, when he talked about difference in foreign policy.
He was very, very cautious about how he said that. For instance, he said, I did not vote for the war in Iraq. Of course he didn't. He wasn't in the Congress. He wasn't in a position.
Well, he also made a speech opposing it.
He also said that he was not, he didn't support the president in his war on Iran, not war, but he wasn't in, he didn't go that day. He didn't vote on that amendment. They all politicians do this. They say something that they think that everybody wants to hear. And that's essentially what it amounts to.
Barack Obama is telling you that he's not like all politicians. He is something new.
And that is the important point out of all this. Instead of picking apart, you know, one thing that he says or another thing that he says, the important thing about this is that he is appealing to a whole new group of people. He's bringing a breath of fresh air. I have an 18-year-old niece who's at the New School University in New York City, and everybody that she knows is supporting Barack Obama because he is speaking to them, and they are convinced that he is speaking to them. And that is the important thing, as it was Caroline Kennedy's editorial op-ed in the New York Times when she said, he reminds me of my father when JFK first came along. And he also was a breath of fresh air. He also was speaking to another generation. And that is Barack Obama's unique qualification.
Bob Williams, if Barack Obama gets the nomination and if John McCain gets the nomination, we're going to have quite a generational thing going. I mean, the differences in age, just the physical difference between the two candidates, it's going to be substantial.
I think that's the wonders of Barack Obama's campaign. He is bringing people between 17, because some of them would cheat and say they're 18, between 17 and 29 into the race, as Lee Dreyfus did 30 years ago.
And again, for those of us who were just tuning in, you helped coordinate Lee Dreyfus's campaign for governor when people thought it was really a long shot.
I lost 20 pounds doing it, too. No, but I think that Obama has hit on a perfect issue that she has to answer, and that is, I am taking no money from lobbyists. Now, I want him to define that. Special interests are the teachers' union, the retired people, the drug people. Tell me, what does he mean, I'm taking no money? But I think that's his strongest issue to the 24-year-old who has never voted before in a presidential election. Boy, does that sound as pure as the driven snow. And she's got to come back on that. That issue is right out there, and if I were running his campaign, I would push it as far and as fast as I could.
He went out of his way in that address to mention the issue of torture, which I think is less of an issue with John McCain as the Republican nominee, because he, of course, experienced it firsthand, up close for 5 years in Hanoi. But McCain is being slammed on this and on his stance on torture, again by Rush Limbaugh, by Ann Coulter, by this pantheon of people on the right. And what I don't get, and I'm just going to ask you, Bob, why, if you're a conservative and you believe in limited government, which is what conservatism is supposed to be all about, why do you believe the government should have the power to torture people?
I don't believe they should have the power to torture, because in our war against Iran, every time one of our young men and women are captured, they are going to be tortured, because we can't be as pure as the driven snow anymore. And I think that is a giant issue, too. And I think the kids, the 18 to 29, understand that, because they don't want to see their buddy tortured in any war, because we can do it, they can do it. I think it's a very bad issue. And I think that here's the man, and the best commercial I've seen is John McCain lying in bed, where he had 1 year of solitude and 1 year of practical solitude as a prisoner of war. And he was tortured. And he can take the spot. No, I was there. We're not going to do that to anybody. And I think I should tell him he can't raise either arm above the shoulders, because they tied his hands behind his back and then dislocated both shoulders.
Dislocated, the one that wasn't dislocated when his plane crashed.
Yes. You corrected me. I stand corrected.
John, how do the Democrats run against a war hero?
By saying you're against war. That's the obvious answer, right? Right now, the problem is that we are in a war. We're in a war that nobody really likes anymore. John McCain has been put on the spot because he is a war hero and because he has those credentials and because, as Bob said, he's the grown-up in the room. And I agree. In the Republican room, he's the only grown-up. And yes, he's now stuck with that because he is supporting this war, the ongoing war. He was against the way that Rumsfeld was processing the war, but he still is in favor or supporting this war.
You
fight against a war hero by saying you're against war. Nobody should ever be put in a position that he was put in.
Somebody who agrees with you, and it will probably come as no surprise, is our longtime Democratic Congressman Dave Obie. Earlier this week, I asked him about exactly that.
Two things. First of all, I'm surprised at the fact that such a huge percentage of independents who voted for McCain in New Hampshire were very much against the war. That indicates to me that they do not yet know that McCain has said that we ought to stay in Iraq 100 years if it's necessary. So I think, number one, you have to separate the myth of John McCain from where he really stands on these issues. Secondly, I think people are not so much interested in what Democrats think of John McCain. They want to know what the Democrats are going to do to lead the country.
That's Dave Obie earlier this week. And Bob Williams, it's that one flippant comment by John McCain, we can be there 100 years if necessary, taken out of context, repeated over and over again, that's going to haunt him.
Yes, it will. And he has to answer that just like Obama has to answer and Hillary has to answer on the special interests. There are issues out there and that's what I think is the glory of these campaigns right now. You have three very bright people that are left, and they have brought up some issues that everybody around the kitchen table sometimes has talked about. Talked about torture? Absolutely. Talked about special interests? Absolutely. Address them. And I think this is going to be the next, it's a gestation period, 9 months, isn't it, until the election. I think we're going to have some glory and some failure that we've never seen in my lifetime. I'm excited about this campaign.
Nine months, it's like bearing a child, isn't it?
Well, Connie has two daughters. Let her. I have never borne a child. I have four children. But
actually, what I was going to comment on is this is really going to be a historic election any way you look at it. John McCain will be the oldest person to have run for office. Hillary Clinton will be the first woman. Our Barack Obama will be the first African-American.
And Mitt Romney, who just dropped out, was the first Mormon.
Exactly. It's very historic.
Well, his father did run, too.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Had he been elected president, he would have been the first mm-hmm. Mormon. You're listening to Route 51, regional talk radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking presidential politics. We'll be back with more right after this.
Wisconsin Public Radio is pleased to welcome Leanne Hansen, host of NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday, to Stevens Point on March 4th for the Wisconsin Public Radio Central Region's Listener Dinner and UWSP Willett Lecture Series. Call 800-749-3906 for details and reservations.
Get enough jargon and double talk in the rest of your life, why would you want it with your science news? I'm Ira Flatow. Each week on Science Friday, we skip the bogus and buzzwords and don't dumb down the big issues in science, medicine, technology, and the environment. So join me on Science Friday as we discuss science sensibly. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
You just joined us. We're talking presidential politics with John Smart of the Park Falls, Price County Democratic Party, longtime Republican strategist Bob Williams, and also Connie Sexauer, an assistant professor of history at UW Marathon County. If you want to get your two cents in, we've got a few minutes left. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. That's 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Here is the candidate we haven't heard a clip from yet, the man who on Super Tuesday said something that turned out to be true. He said, I've been told this is a two-man race. It is, and I'm part of it. Mike Huckabee.
We've done our job when that kid's future is better because he has a better school to go to. He has a better road that'll get him to and from that school and his dad to and from work. We've done our jobs when that kid is within a bicycle ride of a fishing hole, so maybe he won't grow up on drugs because instead of having drugs in his hand, he's got a fishing rod or a musical instrument, something that gives him positive reasons for getting up and facing the day, not something that just has to fill the vacuum. We've done our job when that kid has a real chance to not only get through school but go on to college and get a decent education and break through the cycle of poverty that his family's been in for generations. And yes, I'll tell you, this country does have pockets of poverty and disease and pockets of hunger that are still there.
That's Mike Huckabee saying that as a politician, he always tries to think of a 7-year-old boy in the poorest section of Arkansas when he decides what he's going to do and what he isn't going to do on the campaign trail. Republicans don't talk enough about poverty, do they, Bob?
No, and he's the only one that's been really talking about it, either of all the candidates. Isn't that interesting? The lower 8% of our nation never gets mentioned. I don't know if they think the middle class doesn't want them to or what. He is a Baptist preacher, and he has that marvelous meter in his speech of a Baptist preacher. I am fascinated by the man. I could vote for him.
You could vote for Mike Huckabee.
I could vote for Mike Huckabee. I'm not going to, but but he is. He's a Baptist preacher, and he's preaching to the choir.
And you know, he reaches a lot of people who don't agree with him. And if I had to pick one candidate who reminds me more of Ronald Reagan than anyone else, I would pick Mike Huckabee in terms of his style, in terms of his approach, and in terms of the transparent honesty.
And his sense of humor. He's funny. He reminds me much. Put a red vest on him and he's Lee Dreyfus.
Let's go to the phones. We have Bob in, is it High Bridge, Wisconsin?
It is.
Bob, you're on Route 51.
Right now, my wife and I we're in our 60s. And if Hillary Clinton is nominated for the Democratic president in a party, my wife and I will both vote against her and vote for John McCain. If Obama is nominated, we'll vote for him. We're 100% behind him. And it kind of coincides with some of the people are saying in the news media. And one of the biggest reasons we're going to vote against Hillary Clinton is I had a wonderful paying job in Wisconsin for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Clinton signed the Free Trade Act, and it was one of the causes for me to lose that job. And we just can't vote for Mrs. Clinton.
Well, from what I understand, Hillary did not at the time, nor does she now, support NAFTA.
It just, and there's other reasons that we will not support her at all.
Bob, thank you so much for the phone call. We are down to our last couple of minutes on the air, and I want to give our guests a chance to respond. Let's start with you, John. That's what Barack Obama says. I'll get Hillary's votes. She might not get mine.
That's a very interesting point, and I think it's a good one for Barack Obama to pursue. It's much more likely that her votes would come to him than his votes would come to her. And that brings up the interesting problem, and that is Hillary's negatives, which are always talked about. And there is something to the fact that while Bill Clinton was president and the Clintons were in the White House, there was a tremendous amount of negativity built up about them.
You had scandals, you had an impeachment, and now you've got Bill Clinton saying some unfortunate things on the campaign trail. Mm-hmm. Republicans are going to run against him if Hillary gets the nomination.
And rightly so.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any way to avoid it. But her negatives are disappearing, though. Her positives are rising and her negatives are going down. Every poll that comes out says so.
Connie, who do you think is going to win the primary on the Democratic side?
I think it's a tough one.
Very quickly.
Well,
you have to choose.
Okay, I'm going to choose Hillary.
Bob Williams?
I will choose Hillary because of the old bulls and the Clinton mystique.
And John Smart?
Well, then I should say Obama. Just to get I've always said all along that I could have voted for any of the Democrats who were running, and I honestly mean that.
We are out of time. We want to thank today's guest, John Smart of the Price County Democratic Party, Republican strategist Bob Williams of Stevens Point, and also the owner of Idea Associates, Connie Sexauer, assistant professor of history at UW-Marathon County. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next week on Route 51, it's Valentine's Day as we look into what it takes to fall in love, and we talk to local couples who have kept their relationships going strong for more than 60 years. That's our show for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, we're heading out of time.